Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
This evening we'll be reading the rest of chapter 10, which means Canto 2, chapter 10, verses 47 through 51. Do you remember what we spoke about this morning? Too long ago, right? See, what did we speak about this morning? Creation and annihilation, right? Yeah, we spoke about that. What else did we speak about? Back to creation and annihilation. We heard that there were three kinds of creation. Right? Do you remember what they are? Mahakalpa, Vikalpa, and Kalpa. So we don't have to review what those are because you all remember just by hearing them. And then what's relevant for the next text is how the purport ended. The purport ended with a delineation of the different kalpas, because kalpa means, it means two different things. What's one of the two things that kalpa means? You're scratching your ear or you're volunteering an answer? Scratching your ear, okay. One day of Brahma. One day of Brahma means 1,000 yuga cycles. One day of Brahma. What else? Secondary creation that he does at the beginning of each day. It can mean both of those things. So, how many days are there in Brahma's 1 month? That's real easy. 30 days per month, right? Okay. So then we heard the 30 days. And each of them, each of the days has a name. So text 47 begins with one of those days. This is one of those days of Brahma. And Maharaj Parikshit is being told by Shukadeva Goswami, O King, I shall in due course explain the measurement of time in its gross and subtle features. That's a preview of Canto 3. There's a chapter in Canto 3 called Calculation of Time by Movements of Atoms. Cool. I mean, that's like really high tech. Modern scientists think that they discovered atoms. The Bhagavatam, long before scientists were babies, knew of atoms. Not only knew of atoms, but they knew how to calculate the movement of an atom over a distance of space And that's a measure of time. But that's coming later. And that both the gross and the subtle features of time. With specific symptoms of each. But for the present, let me explain to you the Padma Kalpa. And if you look in that list of 30, it's not listed. But there's a reason why it's not listed, and that's explained in the purport. The present duration of a kalpa of Brahma is called the Varaha Kalpa, or Shveta Varaha Kalpa, because the Lord, in his incarnation as Varaha, took place during the creation of Brahma, who was born on the lotus coming from the abdomen of Vishnu. Therefore, the Varaha Kalpa is also known as Padma Kalpa, mentioned in this verse. And this is testified by acharyas like Jiva Goswami as well as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in pursuance of the first commentator, Sridhar Swami. So, there's now no contradiction between the Varaha and the Padma Kalpa of Brahma. Very clear, isn't it? What's being said here? The quote that we covered in the purport is not from the Bhagavat Purana, but from the Skanda Purana. Now, what's the distinction? What's different between the Skanda Purana and the Bhagavat Purana? In this case, nothing. Because the Skanda Purana is giving a delineation of the days of Brahma, and it gives as a name Varaha Kalpa, and specifically it's why Shweta Varaha? Because there's a Rakta Varaha and there's a Shweta Varaha. Did you know that? Now you know that. It's mentioned in the eighth canto of Bhagavatam, where the appearance of Lord Varaha is described. And in the commentary, our acharyas indicate that Shukadeva Goswami knew of both the reddish Varaha as well as the whitish Varaha, because they are different, not only in color, but the Leela is slightly different. Remember I said this morning, the Lord does things with some regularity. And in that regularity, there is diversity within that regularity. So he appears as Varaha sometimes in a whitish form, and when he appears in his whitish form, he appears during the creation in the morning of the first day of Brahma's month. The first part, excuse me, of Brahma's day. In that day of the month of Brahma. So he's called Shveta Varaha, and that Kalpa's Shveta Varaha Kalpa, or shortened Varaha Kalpa. That's what's mentioned in Skanda Purana. But because Lord Brahma, who appears from the Padma, the lotus that springs from the navel of Lord Vishnu, and is during that Kalpa, or that creation, the sub-creation, the daily creation of Lord Brahma, is sometimes called the Padma Kalpa. So if you were doing it just real simple, Varaha Kalpa equals Shveta Varaha Kalpa equals Padma Kalpa. They're the same day of Brahma, signified by that day when Lord Varaha appears. That is Shveta Varaha. In the 8th canto Bhagavatam, I started to mention, Shukadeva Goswami mixes the two because they're slightly different, what the Lord does during those different Varaha appearances. The Rakta Varaha is different. Slightly different in the Leela. But he includes them as one without making a differentiation, and our commentators take note of that. He doesn't take the trouble to spend extra verses explaining there's two of them and I'm combining them. He just combines them. So our commentators separate them. With that verse, he, Shukadeva Goswami, goes in a completely different direction. Or the author, Vyasadeva, goes in a completely... He stops speaking about creation and annihilation. He's said enough. And he's given a little announcement. Later I'm going to tell some more about time. Later I'm going to tell some more about the Padmakalpa. Then he takes a right-hand turn. Not a U-turn. But he goes into another topic altogether. And the other topic altogether is something that you're very familiar with from First Canto. And that is the talks between Shaunaka and Sutta about Vidura. Remember, First Canto, Chapter 13, Vidura leaves, goes on pilgrimage, comes back, hangs out with Dhritarashtra for a while, hammers on him. Dhritarashtra, you're nonsense. And, you know, so some dialogue about Vidura. So, Shaunaka wants to revisit about Vidura. So here's what he says. Shaunaka Rishi, after hearing about all about the creation, inquired from Sutta Goswami about Vidura. For Sutta Goswami had previously informed him how Vidura left home, leaving aside all his relatives, who are very difficult to leave. Purport is one sentence. The Rishis, headed by Shaunaka, were more anxious to know about Vidura, who met Maitreya while traveling to the pilgrimage sites of the world. And then text 49 and 50 has a long purport, and that's what we're mainly going to speak about this evening. Shaunaka Rishi said, "Let us know, please, what topics were discussed between Vidura and Maitreya, who talked on transcendental subjects, and what was inquired by Vidura and replied by Maitreya. Also, please, let us know the reason for Vidura's giving up the connection of his family members and why he again came home. Please, also, let us know the activities of Vidura while he was in the places of pilgrimage." That's going to keep Sutta busy for a while, explaining all of that. Shaunaka's expert. He not only knows how to milk a cow, he knows how to get every last drop out of the cow. Because in Canto 1, Chapter 13, we just hear that Vidura left home. He went on pilgrimage. He met Maitreya. He asked questions until he was satisfied. And then he came back. And went on. So Shaunaka says, "Hey, what were those questions? What were the answers?" And so forth. You said he was fully satisfied. Let's hear that subject matter that fully satisfied him. And why did he leave home? And while he was at the other places of pilgrimage, what did he do? So that question is going to take up about 3.5 cantos. Including the topics about time. Because Vidura heard about time from Maitreya. But Shukadeva Goswami is narrating this, and he knows that that happened, because it happened already. So he tells it, and then Sutta retells it to Shonaka, and so on. Okay, purport. Sri Sutta Goswami was narrating the topics of creation and destruction of the material world. But it appears that the rishis headed by Shonaka were more inclined to hear about transcendental subjects, which are on a higher level than the physical. This is repeating something that we said this morning about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and his mastery of science of astronomy, and he just left it. Transcendental subjects are on a higher level than the physical. There are two classes of men, namely, those too addicted to the gross body and the material world, and others on the higher level who are interested more in transcendental knowledge. Srimad Bhagavatam gives facility to everyone, both the materialist and to the transcendentalist. By hearing Srimad Bhagavatam in the matter of the Lord's glorious activities, both in the material world and in the transcendental world, men can derive equal benefit. So many times Prabhupada would say that about commentators want to go, or people giving katha, they just want to go to the Gopi Gita, 10th canto, not only just 10th canto, the gopis with Krishna. And the audience doesn't want to hear the other stuff, they just want to gopis with Krishna. But the whole of the Bhagavatam is fully transcendental, including Krishna, the description of Krishna's activities with the material energy. Nonetheless, there is a distinction. By hearing Srimad Bhagavatam in the matter of the Lord's glorious activities, both in the material world and in the transcendental world, men can derive equal benefit. The materialists are more interested in the physical laws and how they are acting, and they see wonders in those physical glamours, sometimes due to physical glamours. They forget the glories of the Lord. They should know definitely that physical activities and their wonders are all initiated by the Lord. That sentence is a theme when thinking of or when reading this type of subject matter in the Srimad Bhagavatam. What's the purpose? To see the hand of the Lord behind everything, and not just with faith, with kind of blind faith, but seeing the symmetry and the beauty and the majesty and the intricacy and the opulence of the Lord. We're going to read some more about the opulences of the Lord tomorrow morning also. How the opulences of the Lord help us appreciate the Lord. Naturally so. That's how they help us remember the Lord. Instead of just seeing glamorous things or the beauties of the world and not seeing Krishna behind them. The rose in the garden gradually takes its shape and color to become beautiful and sweet, not by a blind physical law, although it appears like that, but behind that physical law is the direction of the complete consciousness of the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, things cannot take shape so systematically. Hare Krishna. So, I'd like to make a suggestion. The suggestion is that in one of the rooms, there's a wire from the amplifier and there's a speaker. Because it's nice for the mothers to hear the class until the child screams, and then they take the child away. But it doesn't stop. There should be a room where the mothers can hear and the children can scream. And it doesn't disturb the class, because it's going to happen. We know it's going to happen. It's not the children's fault. It's not the mother's fault. It's just material nature. They should have a separate room. They can go, hear the class, and then when the children scream, it doesn't disturb the class. It may disturb the other mothers and the other children in the room, but it won't disturb the whole class. And we don't want mothers to be deprived of the opportunity of hearing. But at least when I'm here, if that could be done, that would be nice. It's something about this, that sound vibration and the sannyas ashram that don't mix. Sorry. Hare Krishna. I'll spend a little bit of time, as I did this morning. I'll just go a little more deeply with the same subject. Remember this morning I was describing Sadaputta's evaluation or sharing with me. When Christian evangelists, they would go on circuit to the colleges to thump the message of creationism, but they get booed off stage because they couldn't answer hard questions. So it did more to hurt the cause of creationism than it did to support the cause of creationism. So, a more scientific approach for those who are theists is intelligent design. Has that term come overseas here to some of you? You've heard, who has heard of the term intelligent design? Not too many people. Okay. Intelligent design goes something like this. There are different explanations of how events happen. One, it had to happen. There's a physical law that says it has to happen a certain way. Like gravity or something. Some physical law. It has to be this way. It's just a law of matter. Second, it's just chance. It just happened that way. And if you look at events as a scientist and say, did it have to be this way, or by chance is it a plausible explanation it happened this way, and you rule them out, then what are you left with? You're left with, it was designed to be this way. They give examples. I've made a whole presentation and visited colleges making, here's what evolutionists say, and here's what the intelligent design people say, and here's what the intelligent design people say about the evolutionists, and here's what the evolutionists say about the intelligent design people. And then, what do the Vedas say? was the Vedic perspective. The books of ancient wisdom of India, what's their perspective on these two arguments? So the intelligent design folks say, supposing there's an archaeological finding and there are a bunch of arrowheads, stone that's chiseled, and you know the shape is all the same shape, and there's certain marks that make the sharp edge on this side and sharp edge on that side, and a little thing at the bottom because that's where they put the stick on, and there's a whole pile of them in a radius of the center of the temple room. They find 50 of them, and they're all with that same chisel mark in the stone, and they're all in the same area. Is it a plausible explanation? It had to be that way. It's just a law of nature. It has to be that way. Not so plausible. The other next explanation. It's just chance. Just pieces of stone happen to be looking alike, all of the same shape, and 50 of them all in the same space. Just chance. Not so plausible. But somebody put them there. It was designed that a bunch of people used them in that same area. That's more plausible. So you take the more plausible explanation. It was designed. Then you take that same principle and apply it to more sophisticated things. And we'll go very quickly to the more sophisticated thing. The configuration of the amino acids that make up DNA. Microbiology. Based upon this amino acid getting together with that amino acid, producing a certain protein. And then combinations of proteins making a part of an organism. It had to be that way. It's just chance. It just happened that way. Or it was designed. And even just because it's the strands of DNA that then reproduce in the ribosome and so on and so on and so on and so on and produce how the amino acids form together to make the proteins, and then how the proteins get together to form certain organisms, parts of an organism. Just the information in the DNA strand, they quote, what's his name, Mr. Microsoft, Bill Gates, to say there's more information contained in the DNA of any cell than you find in, the most sophisticated computer, how they store data in the DNA is more sophisticated than a computer. And would you say the computer, it had to be that way? No, it's just by chance. It's a fundamental law of nature. Computers just have to be, because it's a fundamental law of nature. Or it was just chance. Or would you say some intelligent people designed it? And so who designed the DNA? If the scientists say it's because of DNA that the organism becomes a nice rose. Okay. You can find out the DNA in a rose. And there's all that information in the DNA in a cell of a rose. Where did that information come from? That when you unpack it, it becomes a rose. And even decides what color. And decides what fragrance. And decides how big and how tall. And how many buds will come out of that rose bush. And how many years it's going to live. And what are the conditions under which it will live and not live. All that information is in the DNA. Okay, now we're down to microbiology. How did that happen? If life comes from DNA, how did the DNA get its all the information stored in it? The intelligent design folks say It wasn't because it has to be that way. It's just a fundamental law of nature. And mathematically, they can demonstrate. By chance, it's not possible. Not even not probable. It's not possible. It's not possible. That's ruled out. So then you take what makes more sense. That's a creationism argument from a science perspective. In America, there are court cases all over the country, in courts, mind you, not, you know, scientists, but courts are deciding whether that can be in textbooks in America or not. Huh? And their ruling is based upon the Constitution of the United States that says separation of church and state. So separation of church and state says God has to be out of that which is run by the state. And schools are run by the state, so that has to be out. It can't be in science. You can put it in religion, but you can't put it in science. Because it's not science. Because science is one thing. Matter and the laws governing matter. That's science. Ask a scientist, they'll tell you. So, why is all this detailed information in the Bhagavatam? So that we can understand behind all these minute happenings in nature, whatever the cause may be. Even Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, what's the cause of activity in material nature? It's material nature. Like, you know, what causes the living entity to do things? It's the impulses born of material nature. So we can say, rightly so, material nature is doing everything. We can also say behind material nature is Krishna. Behind DNA is Krishna. Behind all the information in the DNA strand, within the micro, you can't even see it. It's so small. You need super high magnification. They can see strands of DNA inside the nucleus of a cell. They have magnification. They can see it. Where did it come from? Where did all the information in that come from? It had to be. Just by chance. But you can't say it was designed that way. You can't go in a textbook. That's a sorry state. Okay. So I'll read the sentence again. Behind that physical law is the direction of the complete consciousness of the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, things cannot take shape so systematically. You know, put in the hand of a scientist a DNA strand of a rose and watch that DNA strand produce a rose bush. Excuse me, but he can't do it. Like Prabhupada would say, if everything comes about by combination of chemicals, then my dear scientist, if I gave you the chemicals, can you produce life? Even if you have the chemicals put together with all the intelligent information that's found in the DNA, there's the DNA strand, there's the chemicals. Go, my dear scientist, and produce life, please. Can he do it? Because there's something else involved. They'll say, we're working on it. You know, Prabhupada's post-dated check. You go to the market to buy some rice, and the rice merchant says, I need some payment, I need so many rupees, and you give him a check that says 20 years from now you can cash this check and it's good for this many rupees. Is he going to accept? No. And it's not even, you know, even 20 years later, it's unlimited time later. Sometime later I'll pay you, as a promise. Sometime later I'll pay you. postdated promise. It's not going to happen, produce life, even with the information, even with the ingredients. Brahma can't do it without the empowerment of the Supreme Lord, what to speak of Mr. Scientist. Continuing in the purport, the artist draws a picture of a rose very nicely, with all attention and artistic sense, and yet it does not become as perfect as the real rose. Doesn't have the fragrance of the real rose, doesn't have the beauty of the real rose, doesn't have the same color as the real rose, and it can't produce other roses. If that is the real fact, how then can we say that the real rose has taken its shape without intelligence behind the beauty? That sort of conclusion is due to a poor fund of knowledge. That's a polite way of saying it. So again, here's the theme of why this detailed knowledge is being presented. One must know from the above description of creation and annihilation that the Supreme Consciousness, being omnipresent, can take care of everything with perfect attention. That Supreme Consciousness, of course, is Paramatma. He's everywhere. He's conscious of everything. I mean, we can't even think of being conscious of everything. We can't even think of everything. What to think of being conscious of everything? What to speak of conscious of everything, not only now, but in the future and in the past, simultaneously? We can't even begin to think like that. It's circuit overload. Huh? Whew. Not only every person, but every microbial germ and every plant and every bug and every bird and every fish. Everything living. Simultaneously conscious of everything. It's inconceivable. That's super consciousness. That's Paramatma. And that's just a portion of a plenary portion of Krishna. That is the fact of the omnipresent Supreme Lord. Persons still more foolish than the gross materialist, however, claim to be transcendentalists and claim to have such supreme all-pervading consciousness, but offer no proof. Have you ever had anyone tell you that they're God? You've had that happen? I remember in a college program, it was specifically Bard College, just above New York City, one of our devotees was going to complete his undergraduate studies, so I attended one of his classes, spoke at one of his classes, and one of the kids came up afterwards that had been reading some book. He listened to everything very happily and came up and said, "I've been reading such and such, and it's such a nice book. I'm realizing that I'm God, and so are you." So here's what Prabhupada says. Such foolish persons cannot know what is going on behind the next wall. Yet they are falsely proud of possessing the cosmic, all-pervading consciousness of the Supreme Lord. I said something else. I looked him right in the eye and said, if I kicked you in the leg, kicked you in the shin, right now, would you say that you're still God? If you got a toothache, would you still say that you're God? If I, and I, reached out, because Prabhupada did this, and if it's all one, why don't you wear a cotton ball instead of a shirt? You're God, I'm God, it's all one. He didn't know what to say. He said, it's a very good book. For them, hearing of the Srimad Bhagavatam is a great help. It will open their eyes to see that simply by claiming supreme consciousness, one does not become supremely conscious. One has to prove in the physical world that he has such supreme consciousness. The rishis of Naimisharanya, however, were above the gross materialists and the false transcendentalists, and thus they were always anxious to know the real truth in transcendental matters as discussed by authorities. Final verse of this chapter and of second canto. Sutta Goswami explained, I shall now explain to you the very subject matters explained by the great sage, that's Maitreya, Shukadeva Goswami, in answer to King Pariksit's inquiries. Please hear them attentively. So Shukadeva Goswami knew of that dialogue, and he explained it. And Shonaka is now asking Sutta, can you explain what you heard Shukadeva Goswami explain? He says, yes, I'll tell you what Shukadeva Goswami explained. Final purport. Any question that is put forward may be answered by quoting the authority. And that satisfies the saner section. That is the system. Even in the law court, the best lawyer gives evidence from the past judgment of the court without taking much trouble to establish his case. This is called the parampara system, and learned authorities follow it without manufacturing rubbish interpretations. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. Let us all obey the Supreme Lord, whose hand is in everything without exception. Creation, annihilation, roses, DNA and RNA, ribosomes, you name it. The Lord is there. So just to summarize some of the points that have just been made. The sages, Sutta answered because the sages asked, and Shukadeva Goswami answered because Maharaj Pariksit asked about the subjects involving material nature. And these subjects involving material nature are purifying for one to hear. And they help one, minimally, they help one to understand that the hand of Krishna is behind everything. And it's not that we can only talk about Krishna in Vrindavan. We can talk about things to do with this material world that are fully under Krishna's control. And here's how it happens, and that's what the Bhagavatam presents for the audience. Another point is some members of the audience, they're more attracted to those kinds of details. And so the Bhagavatam attracts them to Krishna by presenting those kinds of details. The sages, however, Shaunaka and his associates, they wanted to hear those things, but even more they wanted to hear about the eternal associates of Krishna. So they ask about Vidura, the discussion with Maitreya, and so forth. They're all Krishna Katha, and some are dealing with the events of the world, and some are dealing with the transcendental exchanges of Krishna's devotees with Krishna directly. Srimad Bhagavatam is a great adventure. Watching it unfold is very nice. And as you see, there's connections that go back to something earlier, and it resonates with something that's earlier, and then it expands further on that something that's earlier. It's a fantastic composition. And Prabhupada blessed us with the Srimad Bhagavatam translation for our benefit. Okay, so any comments or questions? Yes? It's inferred. Does intelligent design include the conception of a designer? It's deliberately left silent. Because even as far as they go, they're criticized by the scientists. Oh, your theist just sneaking behind the cover of science. We know what you're all about. You just want to bring God into science. Forget it. God has nothing to do with science. They say, we didn't say God at all. We'd say there's an intelligence behind the arrangements of matter. They give it that one of their classic examples is Mount Rushmore. Mount Rushmore in North America is where an artist spent an entire lifetime carving the facial images of three presidents in a mountain. Abraham Lincoln and FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt and George Washington or something. So there's this statue or this artistic creation in a mountainside. So should we say, by laws of nature just had to be that way? Or do we say, by chance? Or do we say, by design? So that's all our argument is. We don't say it was God. We say there was a design. There was some intelligence behind this. Otherwise, it is not explained by these other two ways. That's all we're saying. They say, oh, we know what you're saying. It's the Trojan horse. You're bringing in the Trojan horse. Next thing you know, all these missionaries are going to go running around the field of science, saying, creationism, we won. So they deliberately don't. It's inferred. Intelligent means intelligence. Intelligence means person. Anything else? Yes. My ball. You have to project your voice through the wall there. You got it? Why scientists don't extend themselves to what? Yeah.
Why don't they extend the same concept that they just discover?
You know why. There's Newton's laws of physics, right? It's not God's laws of physics. They want God out of the picture. They're bold. I mean, they're not like indirect, they're direct. Through the advancement of science, we have a very specific objective. We plan to put God where he belongs, out of existence. That's their, you know, some explicit contemplation. They're inspired atheists. And some of them are just, you know, puffed up materialists that says, you know, it's my law. I discovered it. Okay? Who's the author of this? From what you just presented, it seems that Srimad Bhagavatam is such a convincing presentation to convince the scientist or any educated people of today. Srila Prabhupada also says that in his song on board the Jaladuta in the Boston Harbor. But this is not our practical experience when we actually take these topics to these people. We also sometimes hear that Srimad Bhagavatam is an Amala Purana, meant to be the postgraduate study of pure devotees. A. What is that quality we need to bring into our presenting Srimad Bhagavatam to such people? Well, when presenting Srimad Bhagavatam to such, it depends on who those people are. Srila Prabhupada presented Srimad Bhagavatam conclusions to scientists without being a scientist. And some of the scientists appreciated the strength of Prabhupada's logic and the purity of his convictions, and other people Prabhupada was not reaching, and so he wanted the scientists' devotees to do this work so that they could understand the language of the scientists, and the language of the scientists convince the scientists that there's holes in what they know and there's reason to think of some other methodology or approach, and then propose some other methodology or approach. And look at the Bhagavat model. Still requires purity and still requires deep conviction. But if one's language matches the language of the other person, then it helps convince the other person by speaking their language. And, you know, they're models of how they look at the world. And you know their model as well as they know their model, and you look at the world through their model and show why their model has some deficiency. Not only some, it has a lot of deficiency, and there's reasons to look at another model. Then you hold up another model. But there's lots of reasons why people are faithless. I mean, some people even go through that exercise and then they hear it and they still come out the other end saying, you know, atheism. Or, that's interesting. And then they go look at the next interesting something. Because they don't want to commit. They don't want to surrender to Krishna. They don't want to lose their sense gratification. What is it meant when we hear that Srimad Bhagavatam can purify the hearts of people covered by passion and ignorance apart from practicing devotees? Well, the answer to that is same thing as with hearing the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. The sound vibration is pure. So even if it hits the ears of one whose heart is influenced by ignorance and passion, it elevates the soul of that person influenced by ignorance and passion just by contact with a sound vibration. And because the Srimad Bhagavatam is an expanded form of the Maha Mantra, or is with verses of glorification of the Supreme Lord and His devotees and describing many things like creation and annihilation or time and so on, such persons may extend their intelligence into that subject matter and become purified that way also. Because the sound vibration is pure, one becomes purified. That's the short message. And we're enthusiastic to have people receive Srimad Bhagavatam and its message. And it's nice to have it presented by a pure devotee like Srila Prabhupada. And we can try to give some assistance by presenting it as purely as we can and as carefully as we can. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.